everyone. Welcome to the Mid-Range Podcast. It's day 8, 9 of the lockdown. I'm not really sure anymore. But we thought today would be a good day to kind of sit down together, check everyone's temperatures, and see how we're doing and what's new and exciting. By together, I of course mean not physically. We're doing this virtually because that's sort of the MO these days.
It's real. But
are you real? This isn't happening in virtual reality or anything. That was Mickey you heard. Let's start with Mickey. Mickey is co-host of Beats on Repeat and Track and Food and the host of Flux and our sound engineer. Mickey, how's it going?
I'm doing well. Nice to get together with you all under strange circumstances, of course, but this is our first mid-range podcast, so pretty cool.
We've also got Daniel Thomas Williams. Daniel is our resident photographer, writer, contributor. What's going on, man?
Just hanging out in my room, looking out the window.
and last but not least, we got Jamie Ma. Jamie is co-host of Track and Food. He's also one of our resident writers. He dabbles in just about every topic we cover. Jamie, say something.
Hi, guys. How you doing today?
I'm Tristan, co-host of Beats on Repeat. I do some writing for this site, mostly music and film. And I think that's about everybody.
Well, we're missing Tracy, though.
We're missing Tracy.
Tracy's here in spirit.
She is here in spirit. We miss her dearly, though.
She doesn't like us.
So Tracy's kind of like our Elaine. She's, you know, she's one who bounces us out a little bit, you know.
Yeah. and also to mention, Tracy is actually the one who got our website off the ground. So many, many thank yous to her. And she's been a good resource for everything to do with the site. Thus, from that point on. So
if Tracy Elaine, then that makes Jamie Jerry. You're totally Jerry.
I think Mickey's Jerry. I think I'd be more Kramer.
Mickey's Kramer. I guess
I thought you would be Kramer.
I'm Kramer
just because you're the tallest.
Yeah, but you're who's the Dan, you're the idiosyncratic one, Mickey.
Okay, I'm Newman then.
Daniel's Newman.
Dan's Newman.
Oh, yeah, right.
He's fine with that.
It's not bad.
Yeah, that's fine.
And that's the show, everyone. We just talk about Seinfeld characters.
Yeah, I think we pretty much lost everybody by now.
Well, I mean, definitely we're living in a weird time right now. I think it's very interesting that it took us to go through a crazy pandemic to finally get this mid-range podcast or this idea. Because we've talked about this idea for a long time where we kind of all get together and talk about things that are going on in our lives. But I mean, definitely the world is kind of going through a big flux right now. And I mean, I think we should, I don't want to talk about it too much, but I mean, how are you guys handling everything? Just kind of briefly. Personal lives and being staying at home and anybody going stir crazy?
If anyone listened to the Track and Food podcast from Saturday with James Aronzad, they would know that I've actually been in self-isolation for, this is going on to my fifth week now, because I did have possible secondary exposure from the dental conference, which now has had a litany of isolated cases. So I'm going a little stir crazy myself, so much that I actually started, this is so out of character for me, I actually started an Instagram daily Instagram live thing, and for someone who's only at Instagram for maybe 6 months. So if that doesn't tell you how stir crazy I'm going, then nothing will. But otherwise, in good spirits.
This is kind of like the first 20 minutes of, you know, Jack Nicholson and The Shining. That's where Mickey's at right now.
Yeah.
Well, how long do you think it takes for one of us to get to the bar? And we talked with, what is it? Is it Lloyd or Floyd? Who's the bartender?
Oh, the ghost bartender that tells him to go waste his family?
Yeah.
Yeah.
5 days? 5 days? 3 or 6 days, maybe?
Time has no meaning anymore. Dan, how you doing?
I've been doing pretty good, actually. I got a room full of plants to take far too much care of. And I've been cleaning cabinets and surfaces and closets and everything in the kitchen. Luckily, I have a bunch of material that I was saving for real life exhibits. But I guess I don't know when I was going to get to that. And I've got the time to work on it now. So ideally, we'll be doing some digital exhibits, I guess, but some to work on. And ideally, gives people something else to think about for 5 to 10 minutes here and there.
I look forward to seeing your plants.
I'll add them to the list of pictures, yeah.
There we go. Jamie, yeah. What's going on your end?
I mean, I've been pretty good. I mean, like all of you guys trying to stay active and everything. My house is always clean, so I never really have to clean it. So I don't really have to do any deep cleaning.
Oh, my God.
Here we go.
This again.
You guys know me long enough that I'm pretty much a new freak, but no, I've been doing a lot of reading, and I'm reading a really good book on Charles Lindbergh right now, which is kind of cool. It's interesting to kind of peel away and kind of have something like that where you can kind of get your head into a different space. And definitely watching a lot of Seinfeld in the morning for breakfast. And yeah, not much else. I was playing a lot of basketball until recently. They took down the rims. That's kind of annoying, but I went out and just went for a run today. So this nice weather has been very uplifting in a lot of ways. I'm kind of dreading this rain that's going to be on the horizon. But I mean, otherwise, I think a lot, like you guys, I've been writing a little bit, reading. I mean, this is definitely a weird time for all of us. And the idea that this could be something that we could be on for another 8 weeks is definitely something that's, I mean, this has been, I've only been at home for a week and I'm already kind of going stir crazy. And it definitely makes you kind of appreciate like human connection and seeing people. And as much as probably a lot of us would probably not want to say this, I mean, I'm probably going to be very excited to go back to work when we do get to go back to work. So there is that. But, you know, at the end of the day, as long as we're all staying away from each other and we make sure that we don't hurt anyone else and we get through this together, I think I'm fine with just staying at home. So it's good to hear you guys' voices, though. And I mean, especially with a day like today, I mean, looks like we're all getting some money soon from the government. So that's very exciting. And yeah, I mean, things could be worse. We could be at war. That's kind of what I try to keep things in perspective.
We are.
With germs.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, think about it. I mean, there was this really interesting TED Talks that happened about 4 years ago with, who's the guy who owns Microsoft? I'm blanking on
Bill Gates.
Thank you so much. Bill Gates did a really interesting TED Talks about in 2015, where he talked about that the next thing that would be like devastate the world, it wouldn't be a war, it'd be a pandemic. And he said that we're not prepared for it. And I mean, I recently wrote a column talking about this idea about like how this is going to like change the way we do our world. Not only that it's probably going to put us into a recession, but it's just going to make us think about like how our society works and functions. And like, it's I hope that we come away from this with obviously minimal casualties, but also some positive outlooks and thinking about like how we can change things. And Andrew Yang was talking about that recently in the American presidential election, when he's talking about like UBI, something that we should be looking at with the advancement of technology. And I read these things and like, now we're going to be getting money sent out to us. And I don't know, I don't see it as a bad thing that we should maybe stop, you know? So, but these are all just things that I think are going to start coming into our minds as this kind of whole thing kind of peels away. But
I think that one thing that Jamie and Dan just said there that I think is worth touching upon is, you know, we're the war posturing, you know, the next thing we're at war with is this virus, this disease. And I've been kind of reading a little bit about that. And I think that that's somewhat problematic phrasing to put to contextualize this with. The idea of us being at war with this virus is really problematic, because the cultural and societal norms of being at war are very different and pernicious to what's going on right now. You know, when 9/11 happened, the response was, don't let the terrorists win by changing your life. You know, go out and shop, you know, go to Disneyland, go to bars, go to malls and stuff. You know, even dating back to World War II, it was, you know, keep calm and carry on, business as usual and stuff. And the whole idea of that was not to let, you know, the enemy win by changing you. And this enemy that we have right now doesn't have any motives. It doesn't care. It's not trying to do anything. It's not even trying to exist. It just exists. So the notion that we're going to fight it by, you know, beating it at its own game or not letting us push us around or anything is really problematic. That's what's leading to people being like, fuck the coronavirus, I'm going to go to bars anyways, or spring break's not canceled just because some stupid disease thinks it can push us around. You know, that's really problematic. So I think that one thing we have to do about, you know, changing society is to get away from this, you know, war footing, this war posturing.
Yeah, did you guys see that the kid that famously had that quote saying, if I get coronavirus, I get coronavirus. That's like, it's not going to stop me from partying. He issued an apology today on Instagram.
Was like, oh, good for him. Yeah, that was nice of him.
I may have been a little bit wrong about that statement.
Well, that's good. At least he did that.
Yeah. Well, he's 22. So, I mean, but I mean, I'd like to think that that's kind of, I mean, over the course of the last week and a half, I think that sentiment's hopefully changed a little bit in the States, but who knows?
No, I agree with you, Justin. I definitely, we definitely need to just kind of keep that in perspective. And at the end of the day, it's not, you're not really fighting a war. It's just kind of, it is what it is. And there's not much you can do about it.
You're just fighting to survive.
Yeah, exactly. What do you guys think about this whole thing that's been going on here in Vancouver, where people are cheering at the, you know, what is it, the balcony celebrations? I think it's kind of cool. So
I don't have a balcony, so I lack any kind of context for this. It just makes me wish I had a balcony.
Yeah.
I'm too far away. I'm in Carisdale, so
no one can hear Mickey out there.
What, no, yeah, one hell of a balcony, though.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if I listened closely, but
Mickey does have the ideal balcony for shouting things loudly at various points of the day. You really don't take enough advantage of that, Mick.
No, I really should be shaking my fist more at like people driving too fast, and that's
just
that
like
sort
old
of
man yells at cloud. I think it's good. I mean, like, the cynic in me wants to say just like, oh, it's just, you know, another bandwagon trend to hop on. But I mean, you know, to hell with the cynic with me, the cynic in me. I mean, it's a nice show of solidarity and it's a nice show of support for the healthcare workers. So why the hell not? I mean, literally nothing bad that can come from it.
Well, I mean, I think the one interesting thing that I'm really kind of enjoying about this, I'm not as much as you can enjoy anything about this, is I find stuff like that. And I mean, this is definitely something that kind of harkens back to the idea of when we kind of big events kind of bring people together. And I mean, it's really cool to see people doing that. And we're definitely showing solidarity for all the amazing people that are our healthcare workers, who we 100% should be giving them all the praise and love and support that they're doing, risking their lives for our lives. But also just like how, like, you see that, but then you think stuff like, I feel like Instagram in some ways, and you guys can maybe think I'm wrong on this one, but I feel like Instagram's kind of turned into what it probably should have been recently, because when I go on there now, it's less of like kind of people trying to add, like, but it's actually like you see more active engagement now because people are just at home and they have so much time in their hands, but you see a lot more people like just kind of being giving and really kind of partaking in each other's lives a little bit more. And I think that's kind of nice to see. And then like you see like other things, like people are really starting to kind of like talk and communicate a little bit more, hopefully positively. But I'm seeing that now because obviously we're all just stuck on the internet, and it's just like people are trying to find ways to communicate. And you see about these like people are watching movies together through Zoom and stuff like this. And it's just, I mean, if there's any silver lining that we can kind of take from this, especially since we can't really be out with each other, it's just, I think it's one of the nice things that it's kind of shows you the humanity of our society. So, I mean, I'm kind of enjoying that part so far.
Do you think that, going back to Instagram, do you think it's changed because of changes that Instagram has implemented, or do you think that people have changed it just through their habits and activities? Because I'm definitely not just on it more, but I'm also talking to people a lot more, like people that I wouldn't usually like reach out to, or comments that I wouldn't usually make. You know, what else am I going to do? So I've just been, you know, starting conversations a lot more with a lot more people.
What do you guys think about that?
Dan, what do you think?
I don't know if I've really noticed that much of a difference. There's definitely like I've noticed like Lena Cachetto and some other, you know, really talented chefs are at least, you know, giving out recipes and that sort of thing in like a really interesting way. I think she's kind of done stuff like that before, but there's definitely a push for it to be more involving rather than it's out there for more people to see. I think right now, maybe making things that are like a little more accessible to more people to cook, because like we were kind of talking about before, there's a lot of people that can't really cook and there's a lot of people who can't cook at all.
I'm raising my hand right now.
Yeah, these kind of like step-by-step interactive sort of stories that she's doing and other people as well is really helpful, I think, to make it. Like, I think there's kind of an issue with like, I'm just going to keep using Lena as an example. Because she's so talented at cooking and so talented with photography, the end result always looks like something that's, you know, above and beyond what a lot of people think they can do. But, you know, if it's something like, I think one of the things she made was like, I can't remember what it was. It was something like a soup. But anyways, it kind of looks like in the end, it's just like, oh, that looks so good. There's no way I can do that. But if you like break it down into components, you can kind of realize like everything is just a small step that if you just pay attention to what you're doing, you're able to do. I think that kind of stuff is helpful. And I guess there's more of a thing where everybody kind of realizes that, you know, we're in this together. So you still see the kind of like the cynical horse shit and like the dark humor kind of aspect of it as well. But there's also sort of a trend more towards a lightness, I think, where people are trying to trying to participate in something positive for everybody. I definitely think a lot about what I'm going to put on there, because I know I'm in kind of in a situation that I'm very lucky to have, where I'm quite comfortable at home and I have cooking skills and that sort of thing. So trying to balance out, like, here's something nice to look at and not like rubbing it in people's faces. Like, at least I have this going, you know, but in the end, I guess not really in control of that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's been pretty interesting to see everyone's kind of going through it together, and they get to broadcast it. They have the ability to make their life look how it is, but without being able to leave home, basically. And I also have noticed a lot of people taking responsibility when they're like posting things that it's essentially throwback footage or photos. People are making sure to post when it's from so that it doesn't look like they're ignoring the quarantine laws or recommendations or whatever, because I definitely see people less and less now, but you see people out there doing things that maybe they shouldn't be. It's helpful to see that, no, this is from, you know, last year or something like that, because we're kind of in this to not police each other, but like encourage each other to be doing the right thing so that we can get through this and have it be over with. Or, you know, whatever the best outcome is that we can get from it.
Jamie touched upon something a hot second ago there about silver linings. And I think it's kind of would be fun to talk about, what do we think some of the long term positive outcomes might be from this whole mess? Mickey, what do you think?
I think definitely, like, for me personally, I've obviously every day been thinking about what my priorities are. And when something like this happens, you just kind of start to think. And obviously, my heart goes out to everyone in our industry and every industry that's been affected. There's been a lot of stress, but it's kind of made me on a personal level think, like, well, what's really important to me? And, you know, we talk about this all the time with wealth inequality and all that kind of stuff. We're not really going to change that outside of some, you know, well, maybe this is the event, who knows, but that's always going to be there. But for me personally, just kind of like realizing and sort of reconnecting with the importance of like friends and family, and also realizing that I don't need a lot of stuff, and just sort of like, to be more specific, I'm really trying to get my waste down, like what I accumulate in a month in waste. That's been something that I've been really thinking about, and just like living more simply, I think. And I hope that sort of comes through with silver lining wise, everyone can kind of just sort of understand that you don't need to have this extravagant, you know, life. Like, things can be simple and you can be happy. And that's kind of what it's sort of been slowly, those are the thoughts been slowly creeping in my mind.
Jamie, what do you think? What's the potential silver lining from this whole fuster cluck?
I mean, I definitely second what Mickey says. I mean, definitely connecting more with the people you care about and making sure that you keep those people close. And, you know, sometimes I think our lives can get ahead of us sometimes. And we always say that, oh, I'll call my mom tomorrow, or I'll get back to my friend later on and stuff like that. So you definitely take the people in your life that you really care about. You start to realize how important they are too. So hopefully people learn to take them less for granted. My biggest thing that I really hope that we learn from this, and this is going to harken back to just our society in general, is that, like, is how do we learn from this, and so we can be better prepared for it moving forward. I think that comes from government as well, and I think it comes from us as citizens to make sure that we demand certain things, realize that there's faults and cracks in our systems, and that we address them. I'd like for society to be very proactive once we come out of this, where I think groups should be getting together, and I think we should be coming up with plans to make sure that we find ways to help each other, because I think we're doing that really well right now. I think everyone's going out of the way to make sure that we help all those that are going to be affected by this extremely, but I think that's something that we should learn to do all the time, and I hope we can find a way to do that. You know, like, you see things like this, people forgiving rent and doing this, and celebrities donating money and all that stuff. And it's like, okay, but we should, you know, there's a lot of inequality and a lot of poverty and a lot of problems in our society. I don't think we should have to have a pandemic for people to be that generous and giving. I think sometimes we get so much in our own way. And so a lot of us are also very competitive and we want to win and we want to do all these things that I think sometimes we have to, it's nice to see that. And I just hope that continues. So that's kind of it. I mean, And to harken back what I was saying, what Dan was talking about earlier with Instagram, I mean, for me, one of the most enjoyable parts of Instagram right now is seeing Patrick Stewart recite sonnets every day. I think that's kind of fun.
Those are pretty good.
Yeah, so I don't know if you guys have seen those, but it's been kind of fun. But I mean, yeah, it's just like, you know, we're really in this moment where we're trying to be there for each other. And I just hope that we don't all of a sudden, once this ends, just say, all right, fuck it. And everyone to himself again. You know, it's like, let's pick up some of this and let's find ways to keep it going. And make sure that we can help keep helping those people that need the help and maybe bring them up more. Right? So I think a society is only as good as its weakest link, right? So it's like, you know, we're lucky in Canada that we have a lot of things that are afforded to us here. And we're very lucky for what we're given. And let's obviously not take that for granted, but also let's make sure that we help those less fortunate all the time.
I think that a couple potential benefits from this whole mess on like a somewhat more systemic scale are in the last like 5 years or so, there's been a planet-wide rise in right-wing populism. Trump in America, Boris Johnson in the UK, Netanyahu in Israel has totally changed his game plan and just totally embraced right-wing populism. I forget the guy's name in Brazil, but he's like the South American Trump.
Tomorrow.
And one of the most concerning sort of trends that is in all of these individuals' playbooks is to discredit experts and to discredit career professionals, to only get your information from, you know, the dear leader, to only trust the politicians and the sycophants. And that's just been working for the last 4 or 5 years, more and more and more and more and more, where the experts get fired, they get shut out, they get ignored. And it's just, we take our cues in terms of, you know, what's happening in the world or the economy or health or immigration just from a bunch of politicians with agendas. And it's been really pronounced lately. And I'm hoping that one of the things that changes with this is that trend starts to subside and that we start listening to the experts again. We start listening to scientists and professionals and stuff, because the amount of misinformation spread by politicians with agendas has been downright criminal, and it's catching up with them very quickly. Like, they're being exposed for the frauds that they are, thankfully. And I think another potential good that might come from this is that people are kind of starting to realize, hopefully, that the economy is not the stock market. The stock market is not the economy. Outside of, you know, some of the working class that are reaching retirement years that have done reasonably well, but still have a foot in the actual means of production for a country and have some savings in the market, that's it. The stock, like, they're just portfolios for rich people. The economy...
Two separate things, yeah.
Oh, yeah. The economy is people that go to work. The economy is people that work in restaurants and factories and hair salons and bars and drive buses and blah, 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 blah. These people are the economy. And the economy shuts down when they can't work. And it's been really good to see just a universal pushback against this notion of, let's just sacrifice 2.5% of the economy or of people to get the economy going again, when what they really mean is to get the stock market going again. And that's it. And I really hope that that distinction becomes more and more underlined as this crisis continues and people stop listening to the rhetoric about how the stock market is indicative of the economy. Because it's not indicative of employment. It's not indicative of wages. It's not indicative of income gap. It's not indicative of conditions. It's not indicative even of GDP.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I'm hoping that's something that changes from all this.
Okay, boys. I noticed that you guys made a mixtape yesterday. A little.
Yeah.
Mick and I did. Yeah, we sure did.
I see that.
We all did, actually.
Actually, yeah, Dan made me one too. Okay, so my curiosity about that is, it reminds me of the movie High Fidelity and the joys of like taking a tape and actually making a mixtape.
Sure.
So, part of that, because Dan, you said that the one you made yesterday, and anybody who's listening to this right now, you will have links to this so you guys can listen to these mixtapes for sure. But when you guys made your mixtapes yesterday and you're thinking about this, because we obviously don't really do them as often anymore. Obviously, you guys on Beats on Repeat, you guys make one every week or whenever you guys release an episode, but most people don't do it as much anymore. Is there a certain joy that still comes from that when you guys are making it now? Like, because I was like looking at that and just kind of the fun of doing that again. I thought that was kind of something that I was like, I kind of miss doing that. I miss having CDs where I'd make them and my brother and I we'd be like trying to put songs together and, you know, you got to put this on number four and this on number five and this number six. It's like, there was a discernible art to it. And I was kind of curious on what your guys' thought process was that.
I make playlists all the time. I guess I would argue that that's still a thing that a ton of people are still doing. I definitely know what you mean by like doing the layout, like the way that, you know, if you're going to make a burn CD or like, you know, if I'm thinking about making mixtapes, it was generally based on what order things came on the radio. But like, once you started making CDs, you certainly thought about what order things were in. I just kind of imagined that with playlists that I make now, is it's just probably going to be listened to on shuffle anyway. So it's really more of a, can't avoid using the word vibe here, but basically like trying to figure out what the function or setting is for the playlist. And, you know, a lot of it is for a soundtrack to a pop-up dinner or for dinner services at Dachi or, you know, whatever, you name it, whatever you make playlists for. It's just sort of trying to play within what you think is appropriate for that. And there's hard cuts you got to make because hard cuts is probably like bringing up the drama in it, but definitely there's a feeling where you got to take songs off a playlist that you really, really like that song, but it just doesn't work. And you kind of have to admit that to yourself. And those kind of moments are certain fun to it. Trying to imagine, you know, this horn section in this one song goes on for just a little bit too long. And it, even though it's enjoyable to me, I know is probably annoying and you got to take those out. But yeah, this last list, I ended up listening to like Polynesian sort of like Hawaiian music. And then just listening to that and taking care of plants and sort of noticed that I felt like this is what, you know, old people would like to listen to. And then for the first time started thinking about that I'm going to be that old guy and I'll not necessarily be listening. Like, you know, maybe when I'm old, I'll listen to what I thought old people listened to when I was young. And I don't know, there's a certain fun kind of exercise you get to do when you're making a playlist that's not for a restaurant or something that's supposed to please someone else's needs.
I think that Daniel hit the nail on the head there when he mentioned how hard it is to make cuts. And doing it for what you think are the right reasons. Everyone present here probably knows that I love making playlists. And my favorite playlists to make are always the top 100 tracks of the year and ranking them. And it's always really hard to narrow it down to just 100. And it's even harder to put them in what I think is the proper order from 100 to 1. That was especially hard doing. I did a top 200 songs of the decade playlist a couple months ago. And getting that down to 200 and getting it in just the right order was a fucking challenge.
Yeah, but how do you get from like how do you know that a song fits at like 131 and 146? Like that part to me is like when you did that, I was like, how the fuck is he doing this? I have no idea how you're doing that.
Basically, I would group them together into chunks of around 20 or so, and then I would just focus on that 20 and shuffle around just, you know, the songs in that little subset. And then I would compare them to the other subsets and I'd see like, did I totally miss the mark there? Or am I comfortable with this being there? And just revise and look. And there's also easy, like, you know, the first part that you'll figure out is your top 10. And then you can kind of work your way backwards if you have to. But I mean, luckily there's no wrong way to do it. You just have to do it over and over and over again until you're satisfied with it. And then once you're satisfied with it, that's correct.
You love the movie High Fidelity.
I wonder if High Fidelity is an okay film. Side note. I don't know if it's aged very well.
And John Cusack's great. They have the new TV show right now with Zoe Kravitz on, which is...
I don't know if it's okay, this idea of women being relegated to a list of events in a person's life and that's it. I think it's got some bad connotations.
I've actually never seen it.
Nope.
Who's in High Fidelity? Either of you?
Of course, me and Dan have never seen it.
Why haven't you seen High Fidelity?
So, well, I know, because like I sent you guys a link earlier today because like it looks like The Ringer is going to be doing a Wire podcast where they're going to go back through all the episodes, and I sent the link to Mickey. And Mickey's like, "Why would you send this to me? You know, I'm never going to watch this." And I was like, "Fuck." It's
you know, my brother did a Seinfeld podcast where he and his recording partner would just talk about every episode in order for a half hour or so, and it was called What's the Deal? pretty good, right?
Yeah. Jamie, you know that I'm so far away from the pulse of modern society that I just I can't even.
It's a 20-year-old movie. You've had time.
That's true. I have no excuses. It's true. I don't have any excuses, but it's just something I've never wanted to be like, huh, I wonder if that's a good movie.
No, it's really good. It's like it's definitely dated, because like when you watch it, it's definitely got that he's still making tapes, and it's like it's kind of got this thing. But the best part of the movie is when they're in the record store. It's just like you have that nostalgia feeling. Like it's kind of like you have the two super nerdy, super like elitist fuckers who are working behind the counter who just like think they're better than everyone. And then when people come up and buy records, they judge you like immediately. And then it's just like this huge diatribe. It's like, I don't know. I mean, what's that one that came out in 1995?
You're talking about Empire Records, are you?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. It's kind of got that idea. So they kind of have this inbreeding of kind of giving you this idea of this culture, what it's like there. And Jack Black is just fucking hilarious.
All the record store stuff is great. And it still holds up pretty well. Like that part when John Cusack says, I hired these guys for one day a week. They just kept showing up. is really funny. It's just I think it's maybe more objectifying to women than you might remember it being, and it gives me a bit of trepidation about ever watching it again. But
it makes me wonder what the new show is like, because they have a female lead now, which I'm kind of curious.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, no, I haven't had a chance to see it either. So,
Mickey, what are your thoughts on playlists? Give us the goods.
Well, of course, as people may or may not know listening to the show, I do a playlist every week, essentially, for the Flux show. Kind of when I'm at my most happiest. I think playlists are really important. And I know a lot of people make them. And finding the through lines through tracks is something I really enjoy. And obviously, I've been a DJ since I was about 21. Yeah, music is very important to me, and I think it is to a lot of people. And being able to arrange it is a very satisfying accomplishment. You know, Tristan, when you make your list at the end of the year, which I started doing now for Beats and Repeat, it's just so satisfying when you have like this like Rubik's Cube puzzle piece, and you're like, it maybe isn't making sense. And I actually go through this every week. And then you just move one song like two spots down, and you're like, oh yeah, that's it. That's the order. Just really satisfying. I hope everybody has that same experience, but yeah, like I said, music is the best thing ever, and arranging it is very, very satisfying.
Yeah, but I have a problem with you too, because I made my list. It was only a top 10, but you both chastised me because
you had two artists.
Can't have two artists in the top 10.
Why not?
You had two artists have two songs, so essentially four songs were from two artists in your top 10.
Yeah, but
it's not balanced.
Well, top 10 says your favorite songs. Why does it matter if it's from the same band?
Yeah, but there has to be. There's a level of there's some rules involved.
No, there isn't.
There's some unspoken rules.
Oh, here come the record store elitists, Jamie. These are the guys you feared.
Holy crap. Dan, do you care if you have more than one song from a band in the top in your top, whatever your list?
I think you wasted two spaces.
What?
So it's three against one, Jamie. Sorry.
What? No. If it's, I thought the whole point is to pick your favorite songs of that year. Isn't that kind of the goal? When's if I have a band that?
But the inference is that, you know, a broader survey of your own personal music history could have been taken.
Seems lazy.
I was trying to say nicer than that.
I think the way you do it is you just go like this. All I did is I go, what are the songs I listen to the most? That's all it is. It's just, if it's two songs from the same band, then so be it. That's kind of how I look at it.
Jamie, what was your favorite song in the decade? What was number one on your list?
I think it was Red Eyes from The War on Drugs.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So
I think it was in my top 20.
No argument here.
Yeah. Well, Red Eyes from The War on Drugs, and it was a toss up between that. It was the only time I struggled, where it was that or it was going to be Science Killer from The Black Angels. So I was like, it was between the two, so I was struggling.
I disagree with that name title.
Science Killer?
Yeah.
Sounds kind of cool.
Yeah, are you guys liking the music from this year so far? You guys pretty stoked about what's come out so far?
It's been incredible this year. I was saying in a couple episodes ago on Beats on Repeat, there was like a month-long stretch where just an absolutely insane amount of content came out within like
crazy.
30 days of each other. In 30 days, we got U.S. Girls, Caribou, Real Estate, Soccer Mommy, Christine and the Queens, Disclosure, Best Coast, Kamaya, Grimes, and Tame Impala. Again, all within like 30 days of each other. It's been insane.
That was February, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a hype February.
I think the best album I've heard this year so far is Modus Vivendi by 070 Shake. Super, super, super good R&B. I'm a huge R&B sucker.
Dan, you like anything out this that's come out this year so far?
I don't know. I don't know when stuff comes out. I don't really pay attention to you guys are all really good at that, at knowing when, what month, what week things came out, but very rarely does that strike me. I get to it later, I guess.
I hear you, man. That's like me in movies.
Yeah.
Tristan won't let me though. I need to be on it or else he gets mad.
I get very mad.
There's two factions here. There's the two that stay current with pop culture and the other two that don't.
Yeah. I get stressed out if I'm not up to date on music. I get stressed out.
Yeah, well, you strike me as a person who would probably read about music quite a bit too. So I'm sure that kind of helps. There you go.
If you want to read about music, because Tristan, you can probably help me out with this. Okay, so what websites do you guys go to? I go to Pitchfork for sure.
Pitchfork's good. Consequence of Sound is good. They like a lot of metal, but they're good. Tiny Mixtape is good for very obscure stuff. Fader's a good go-to.
Dan, where do you check your music from?
I'm just trolling around on Spotify, I guess, or skate videos. A lot of stuff comes from skate videos, pretty much. Or just like from other people. I tried, even when I was at my peak music nerd, I tried reading about stuff, but I think there's really only so much you can say. I mean, you guys are going to get mad at me for this maybe, but like, I think there's only so much you can say about music without just listening to it. So I know that's not true, and I don't mean to attack you. Just for me, I just don't read about it. There's definitely like artists and stuff that are worth reading about as people. I definitely, what's that? Exclaim? What's that? Cheap printed. I think it's Exclaim. Yeah. I like reading about artists and that sort of thing, but like don't really pursue it, you know?
When you say skate videos, like do they post the music they put on there? Like so you can find it, or do you just kind of have to figure out a way to source it?
It kind of depends where you're seeing it, but like on the Thrasher website, they won't. I probably for legal reasons, but probably also for respect to the artists, they won't put up any clips that don't have the rights to the music. And so there's always, you know, in the credits, it'll say who it is. Most often, depending on what scale of release a video is, it always has music credits. But if it's just like sort of a local video, a lot of people will just use music without the rights to it. And in that case, you won't see the titles in there or anything. But if you go on YouTube or whatever, there's like skate video music websites that will give you the list of all the songs for the soundtracks and that sort of thing. So since I've been a teenager, that's been a huge driver in getting more interested in music than just the radio.
I want to make a point about the whole copyright issue. I just want to point out a little problem I've been having. You know, we've talked a little bit about Instagram in this episode and how it's been a really positive tool in a lot of people's lives, given the severe isolation and sheer boredom that we're all facing right now. Instagram Live has this now new function where you can actually, and you know, I'm not sure if you guys heard of this yet, but has this new function where you can actually add copyrighted music to your stories now, but it's only available in 7 countries. And Canada's unfortunately not one of them.
Mickey, I can assure you, you're the last person to find out about this.
Okay, so yeah, exactly. So you knew, Tristan. Jamie and Dan, you guys probably didn't know that, right?
They knew.
Anyways.
In some way.
Why would other people know this?
Okay, so anyways, I've been live streaming the last couple of days doing a DJ show. Just like playing, just trying to be interactive, involving people in conversation. Tristan, when you were over yesterday, we were talking with Tim from Craft Beer Tourist, ended up talking about some beer recommendations. Just a way to like get people to sort of maybe have an hour of entertainment, find some new music they like, and just have a dialogue and just kind of talk to people I haven't seen in a while. And Instagram Live keeps shutting my ass down for playing copyrighted material. And I have such a huge problem with this. I think it is the most stupid fucking thing copyright and digital rights media in this era we live in.
Because it's a bit obnoxious.
Well, who's downloading, like with the streaming services we have now, who's fucking downloading music illegally? Like who's torrenting anymore? It's not 2008.
I think the notion is that you're using their material for profit and they're not getting a cut.
But
I mean, that's a case by case anecdotal basis. Therefore their blanket move is just not allowed without proper permission, which is obnoxious because there's just a million people in your situation right now that could really just use some more ways to pass the time. And you'd expect right now to be the perfect time to loosen some of these restrictions, but I'm pissed off for you.
Thanks, man. Well, it's our Instagram account, so if it gets shut down, it's because of me. So sorry in advance.
Oh, I saw this article passed around in the LA Times recently, and they're talking about this idea of like how people are all stuck at home right now. So like, what are some of the things that we can do to keep ourselves active? And obviously we're all listening to music. We're all just hanging out. But one of the things I thought was kind of interesting is that like, sometimes it's better, like, or try this, basically what they're recommending for people. It's like, put your phone away, put your computer away, and just like put some music on and just like listen to it without any distractions. And I did this the other day, and actually, not saying that I'm like addicted to my phone, but it does make you think like you kind of have to like just be more present. And when you're doing that, like I just lay down on the floor, just listen to Dark Side of the Moon. And
good one. Nice.
Yeah, no, but it was just kind of a fun thing. But I was just kind of thinking, I wonder what albums you guys would pick in this scenario.
If I was going to just sit on the floor and zone out and do nothing other than pay attention to music, I would probably put on something like Boards of Canada, like Gio Gotti or Beautiful Place in the Country.
I think just to sort of expand on that idea, I think anyone who owns a record player kind of gets this concept because playing a record makes you listen to the tracks in order of the artist intended, and B, keeps you interactive with the experience because you have to get up and change it halfway through. So I think anyone who owns a record player kind of, you know, gets that. I actually would probably listen to Adrian Lenker and Buck Meek's first recorded album together, A-Sides. I'm a huge folk guy. I really love folk music. That's probably the first one I would go to. It's very, very good, very soothing. Adrian Lenker, she's the lead singer from Big Thief, and Buck Meek is her lead guitarist, and they're married, but they released an album in like 2012 of like just in acoustic indie folk music.
Are they married? I had no idea.
Yeah, they're married. Yeah.
That Buck Meek, he's a good looking guy. Totally. I don't mind saying it.
He's a little fidgety when he plays guitar a little bit.
Big Thief is fantastic. Big Thief put out one of the best records of last year.
Yeah, they're good.
Any year they put out a record, it's one of the best records of the year, pretty much. is the shorthand descriptor for Big Thief. Is one of the most relevant existing modern rock bands, I would say. Because music in the last few years has shifted less and less away from the group dynamic and more towards the individual artist. And that's even true for rock and roll, even if it's experienced it less. But I think Big Thief is one of the last important bands out there right now.
It's funny because Bill Simmons had that on his podcast. He was talking about that a couple months ago. I can't remember who he had as an artist. But they were talking about like if you were to think about like who are some of the biggest touring bands out there right now that could actually fill a stadium, there's not that many. And they tried to come up with an idea that the band they thought that was probably the biggest touring band right now would probably be the Foo Fighters. And I was like, really?
I have a real exception with The Ringer doing music stuff because it's all terrible.
Fine.
I'm just saying they feature things like who's that young kid with like the dreadlocks and the face tattoos?
Post Malone. God, he sucks.
They do like features on Post Malone and shit. Like it's so popular mainstream, it like makes me sick in the stomach.
Post Malone is the reason I don't like Spotify to a certain extent. Post Malone is literally the corporeal form of all the Spotify algorithms combined into one person. I'm not even kidding. It's a bunch of fucking executives analyzing Spotify algorithms, saying, what are people like? What's trending? What are they into? Let's just plug all of those into an artist that's willing to just be whatever we tell them to be. And that's fucking Post Malone. You can't be folk pop and hip hop and be genuinely earnest about it at the same time. He's just an individual that sort of check off boxes.
But I mean, that was kind of inevitable, don't you think? That
sure doesn't mean I have to fucking like it.
How big was that one single of his?
I don't know, pretty big.
Who gives a shit though? That's my question.
Now you sound like an elitist.
I have no problem admitting that I'm a musical elitist. I think
Mickey's a contrarian.
I'm a contrarian, but the perversion of popular music in the last 30 years has just been insane.
But why are we losing? Because I mean, Tristan, you said something really interesting. Why are we losing bands? Why are people gravitating towards more solo stuff? I mean,
I don't know. I don't have a good answer for it.
Well, I know. I know.
The answer is advancement in information and technology. People can, if you're a young, you know, 18-year-old, 17-year-old, 15-year-old kid, you have access to learn how to play music on the internet. You have access to software that's going to elevate your, or not elevate, but speed up your progress in that learning of that music. And I think you're seeing more DIY people, like in the last, you know, Tristan, what, 8 or 9 years? How many multi-instrumentalists have we seen that basically do it Prince style, where they play all the drums, they play all the accompanying acoustic elements, all the synth parts, they build songs and create them. And that's like,
so you're saying it's causing a reduction in the group dynamic?
Well, I don't think so. Just answering Jamie's question, I think that's why you're seeing more solo artists, because it's for, if you have the work ethic and the talent, you can make an album on your own easily. Whereas that may not have been the case, you know, 40 years ago.
So what you're saying is that that's kind of like how, like, isn't that how kind of like The Weeknd and Twin Shadow kind of got started? They kind of did their shit on their own.
Well, that's how literally thousands and thousands of artists got started.
Thousands. Yeah.
We were talking about Empress Of on our show yesterday, Mickey and I, and she got started by uploading tracks to YouTube anonymously. And yet she still caught fire, and then just, you know, a record label tracked her down and said like, hey, can we sign you? That's your typical success story. It's, you know, you're on SoundCloud, you're on Bandcamp, you're on YouTube, and then you just catch fire.
It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. I think it evens out the field of popular music, right?
People, I think it's terrific. I don't know why you can go to SoundCloud and hear
a track for free and be like, that's fucking sick.
I think it's amazing how it's democratized music. It's just, the question was, why has this weighed so heavily towards the individual artist as opposed to the group? Or does that even have anything to do with why we're seeing a decline in the group dynamic? That's what I wonder about.
Dan, what do you think?
Maybe it's just easier to work in smaller groups. I mean, any like bands that I've known, everybody deals with losing a member at some point or another, and it's like a huge hitch in the plan. And with like the more that technology improves, the easier it is for people to record at home. And I agree with the idea that the internet also makes it easier for you to learn to do whatever you want to do. And I think people are motivated to get what they want done. And if that means they have to learn how to do an instrument rather than find a person who works this night, and sometimes then a lot of people will just do it themselves. That might be it. I think also this generation is, you know, pretty sensitive, and it takes less people to appeal to a sensitive person with the right lyrics rather than needing two guitarists and like a full 5-person band. I don't really know. Otherwise, I don't really know how the music industry works.
People in the 80s are pretty sensitive. People in the 80s
Oh, I mean, we started this podcast off talking about things that are problematic, so I think my case is pretty strong.
Oh my god. You look back in the 70s and the 80s, it's just band, and now all we're doing is we're crafting egotistical Billy Corgans out there. That's all we're doing. So where they do everything.
Yeah, but I blame the 90s for Billy Corgan.
Yeah, is Billy Corgan not egotistical? Or are you trying to say that?
No, I'm saying he is.
Billy Corgan's a monster.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We're creating egotistical.
That's an understatement.
We want to do everything on our own now. So everybody wants.
No more. Yeah, we don't want any Billy Corgans.
Why not?
We want more Twin Shadows. Why not? Because the world, like Dan said, is getting more sensitive, and we need to focus on love and inclusion and community, and not rock starism and douchebagism and sexism and misogyny and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but he also created some of the best music of the last like 30 years too. So, but I mean,
yeah, but who cares?
Matter. He's a dick.
It's true. They're all dicks.
I know, but it's especially so with him.
Yeah, once you cross that line, your whole catalog is dead to me.
It definitely really is hard for me to defend them, because like the Pumpkins, like Siamese Dream, is still my favorite album of all time. But when I tell people that, they're like, I'm like, fuck.
There's this really funny joke that Aziz Ansari made on one of his stand-up specials like a year ago, talking about when Michael Jackson was kind of, you know, the light was being shined upon what he had done. And he's talking about, man, you know, it's, you know, all these, you know, terrible predatory artists, you know, they're finally, you know, they're getting what they deserve. Like, you know, R. Kelly's been indicted, you know, he's going to go to jail. Everyone starts clapping. Yeah. And then he says, and then Michael Jackson too. I mean, you know, everyone's finding out, you know, what a monster he was, you know, history will judge him properly. And people are kind of like, yeah. And he's like, oh, come on. That was way less clapping.
That's a good impression, actually.
Really. Yeah, that wasn't bad.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, but people still struggle with Michael Jackson even to this day. Like, if you, like, it's even though they watch that documentary and you see that he 100% was a pedophile.
That's the biggest struggle. That's the hardest question for people to answer.
Well, yeah, it's like even the idea, like, well, I mean, there is that weird discussion because that was happening when that documentary came out last year. Like, people, there was that discussion going around, like, should I play his music? And
yeah, 100%.
Like, it, which is totally reasonable for people to think that way, right? You know, it's like, it's understandable to think, like, should I be supporting this, you know, this monster and whatever he did to all these young boys? It's like, you know, he can't defend himself now because he's unfortunately passed away. But, like,
it's always a really easy rhetorical thing to say until Michael Jackson comes up. Then people are like, ooh, they don't really know how to proceed.
Well, because who's actually getting the money? If you're like, say, tomorrow I download a Michael Jackson album, who's getting it, right? They should actually redirect all funds from all future and maybe some from previous record sales and downloads to whatever charity helping supporting youth or something like that. Then you can definitely, you know, start buying his music again. But until that happens, it's just the record companies making money off of him. So that's a hard no for me, just to be clear.
I just wanted to throw out one last question here that I'm sure is going to irritate Dan. But if you could sing as
yeah,
well.
I'm already irritated. It's fine.
Already irritated, yeah.
That's my goal. It's my job to irritate you guys. No, but since we're all quarantined, if you could pick three people to be stuck with right now quarantined, and you obviously wouldn't get each other sick and wouldn't be like, who would you pick? I'd probably pick Barack Obama, Michael Lewis, and probably Conan O'Brien.
That's not bad. I could hang out with him.
I'll go Leslie Ann Feist.
Nice.
Stephen Colbert. And give me Don Nelson.
Who's Don Nelson?
He's a basketball coach.
You take Don Nelson? Why?
Yeah. So now we're chastising the person for the picks, or what's going on here?
I'm just kind of curious.
Oh, he was like one of the most forward-thinking NBA basketball minds in the history of the sport. I'd like to pick his brain about offensive sets.
Wow, that's so interesting.
Does that clear up your answer?
That's totally fine. That's totally
the question. Sorry.
It's great.
I'm having a hard time with this one. I think it'd be fun to hang out with Joaquin Phoenix for a bit.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great choice.
I think I'd like to hang out with Letterman a little bit, but I feel like he would get so bored so quickly.
20 minutes tops.
Yeah, 20 minutes. Absolutely. I was kind of thinking about Conan O'Brien as soon as you said it. Norm MacDonald.
Ooh, good one.
Yeah,
ooh, sure.
Good cut.
Mm-hmm.
Who would I pick for my quarantine buddies? I would pick Solange and Kalila, because let's be real, this is the only chance I'm ever going to get to have to talk to them. So definitely those two for sure. And then I would say John Stewart, because I think his absence is the one that I think of the most. I would be pretty nervous around Solange and Kalila, I'm not going to lie.
Tristan's just frozen sitting at the end of the table.
Be like, so you two like stuff? thank you for listening, everyone. That was the Mid-Range Podcast. If you're listening to this on Apple Music, you can find it on Spotify. If you're listening to it on Spotify, you can find it on Apple Music. I guess we'll put it up on our Beats on Repeat pages. Is that right, Mickey?
Yeah, this will go out on both platforms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Both. And you've, of course, you can also listen to the podcast on our site, Mid-Range. So check us out there. That's really all I've got to say. Thanks for listening.
And everybody out there, just we hope you enjoyed listening to this, and just stay safe, stay healthy, try to stay positive. We're going to get through this as a society. And you know, this was just kind of a little attempt for us to just kind of chat with each other, and we hope you enjoyed our conversation today. And, you know, we'll try to come back more and, you know, hopefully give you a reprieve from kind of whatever the hell we're going through right now in life. And, yeah, thank you.